You get dickheads in any society.
I never said that I thought it would be bad.
Are you high now?
Yeah.
Hey, Tom Tilly with you for Hack. Do you love animals? Do you love them more or less than your boyfriend or girlfriend?
Both me and Sean talked about how we felt about everything.
Today on Hack, an animal welfare activist marries a rodeo rider.
I just couldn't understand why someone would use animals for human entertainment like that.
We're calling it Rodeo and Juliet on Hack today. That story in just a moment. First, could climate change cost Malcolm Turnbull his job for a second time?
You're listening to Hack.
We need to meet our international obligations.
Finkel is a report to the government. It's not government policy on some form of chanting some form of mantra.
On Triple J.
In 2009, Malcolm Turnbull was axed as leader of the coalition, and that happened because he lost an argument over the party's climate change policy. It was Tony Abbott that won that argument. Now, 7 years later, the two men are at odds over climate policy again. This time it's over the chief scientist's recommendation that we adopt a clean energy target. Now, guess what? Tony Abbott hates the idea and Malcolm Turnbull seems to be in favour. And there was strong division over it in their party room meeting yesterday. Now, given the tension this will cause, you could be hearing a lot about this in the news over the coming weeks. So let's explain what it's all about. Here's Shalala Medora.
Remember that hectic storm in South Australia last year that plunged the state into darkness? Well, it was partially the reason the government decided to hold an independent inquiry into the country's energy system. They got Chief Scientist Alan Finkel to run it. The findings came out on Friday.
Electricity is key to our national security, our economic security. Electricity is replete in everything that we do in our lives. It has to be affordable, it has to be secure, reliable, and we need to meet our international obligations.
The report recommended that the states and federal government work together to set a new clean energy target. It's super complicated, but in a nutshell, the target would incentivise energy retailers to use low energy sources through a certificate system, which would then be traded on the electricity market. Here's what Dr. Finkel had to say about that.
And we looked at a number of different mechanisms. When we looked at those mechanisms, the clean energy target was the one that delivered lowest prices and still achieved the security and reliability objectives.
Members on my right.
For a while, it looked like the report may have broken the climate change deadlock.
The time for politics and ideology is over. Australians want solutions.
Opposition leader Bill Shorten said Labor would accept a clean energy target, even though what it really wanted was a scheme that included punishments for high emitters.
We are prepared to push the national interest and even compromise on some of the gold standard changes we think need to be made, just so we can stop arguing about climate change.
But then the war started up again, and it was mostly friendly fire. At least 20 coalition MPs spoke out against the review's findings during yesterday's party room meeting. Mark Coulton from the National Party wasn't pulling any punches.
Finkel is a report to the government. It's not government policy. And I belong to a party and a coalition where we actually discuss these things. We don't drink the Kool-Aid and blindly follow on some form of chanting some form of mantra.
Since 2007, we have had complete inertia from Australian politicians when it comes to the electricity grid.
That's author Anna Crean. She's gone deep into the climate change debate and reckons it's about so much more than just the heating of the planet.
This is not a debate about scepticism. This is a debate about, I think, two very different worldviews, because these people will not be convinced no matter what. It's not a scientific debate. It's an ideological debate.
This is really tricky terrain for Malcolm Turnbull.
Behind him, in his own party, he has a coalition that is steeped in an ideological bog and is a morass and can barely move backwards, let alone forwards.
In 2009, Malcolm Turnbull was rolled by Tony Abbott for the party leadership because he supported Kevin Rudd's emissions trading scheme. Tony Abbott then went after Julia Gillard for introducing a carbon price after she said this.
There will be no carbon tax under the government I lead.
He said it would lead to consumers paying more.
So every time your power bill rises, Julia Gillard has a smile on her face because the carbon tax is doing precisely what it is intended to do.
Despite not having a carbon tax, our electricity bills have doubled in the last 3 years. Tony Abbott continues to be an advocate for the coal industry and a rallying force for the Conservatives within the coalition.
Coal is good for humanity. Coal is good for prosperity.
coal is an essential part of our economic future.
Anna reckons as a result of the political point scoring, we've entered policy paralysis, and no one party is immune from blame. She said Labor's been more than happy to exploit the divisions within the coalition, and that the Greens keep holding out for the perfect deal rather than accepting what's in front of them.
A huge point of blame also can be laid at Labor's feet. You could also lay it at the Greens' feet for not signing off on a carbon emissions trading scheme in the very first place with Kevin Rudd.
Meanwhile, global demand for coal continues to fall, and the amount you fork out for your energy bills keeps rising. Investors aren't keen to put their money into coal or renewables while there's no clear policy in place, so consumers end up plugging funding shortfalls. And there's no end in sight for the hostilities.
Wholesale electricity prices have doubled under the Liberal government. Will the government commit to working with Labor to end 4 years of policy paralysis under this government?
The reality is that the gas crisis in Australia has been entirely created by Labor governments.
Hack. Triple J. The Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull ending that story from Shalala Medora. Craig Kelly is a federal MP from Sydney who was staunchly opposed to Labor's carbon tax, and he was in the party room meeting yesterday that we just heard some reporting from. Craig, thanks so much for joining us on Hack.
Yeah, no, a pleasure, Tom. Pleasure to be here.
Now, Tony Abbott called the clean energy target that Finkel suggested a tax on coal, and then you've got Malcolm Turnbull warning against glib slogans. So are these two fighting again over climate policy?
Look, not really. What we were looking for in the Liberal Party and the coalition, we've got three things we have to balance. Firstly, we have our Paris targets to reduce emissions. That's locked in. Rightly or wrongly, that's the targets we're up with. Secondly, you have to get reliability of electricity. Now, we've seen what's happened in South Australia over the last 12 months. They've had a couple of blackouts over there simply because they've rushed renewables into the system. They've rushed wind turbines into the system without actually thinking through all the details and limitations of their intermittency. And of course, most importantly, and what a lot of us in the coalition are really concerned about, is the affordability of electricity. Now, it's not only for consumers. You know, we go around our electorates and, you know, we see old pensioners that actually are frightened to turn their heaters on in wintertime. They've been frightened to turn their air conditioners on in Australia. This shouldn't happen in a country as energy rich as we are. There's okay. also the issue for business. Now, one of the great advantages and why we are such a prosperous and rich nation is our competitive advantage has been our ability to generate low-cost energy, abundance of it, and we've achieved that through coal. So they're the three things, and sometimes they can become slightly contradictory.
So Alan Finkel basically wrote this report to try and deal with those challenges as well, and the idea he came forward with was, amongst other things, a clean energy target, and this is the one that seems to have caused a bit of consternation in your party room. Do you support this idea?
Look, it all depends what the parameters are. And in Dr. Finkel's report, he suggested the SU have sort of like a low emissions target, but he didn't actually set the parameters. He said that's up for the parliament to decide on, the parliament to discuss.
So in principle, you agree with the idea, because it would basically draw a line, and anyone that, I guess, produced electricity in a way that had a lower emissions than that line would get certificates, and then retailers would be incentivized to buy those so that therefore, I guess, there'll be more incentive in general to use lower emissions electricity. Do you support that idea in principle?
Yeah, so what we had previously, to explain the difference, previously we had a renewable energy target. So if you put renewable energy into the grid, you got a certificate. This way, if you actually produce electricity which reduce emissions, you can get a full certificate or a part certificate. So an example might be, if you replace coal, which has higher emissions, with gas, the gas having lower emissions, under the previous system, you got no benefit from it. There was no advantage. Under this system, if you replace gas with coal, the gas you'll get partial certificates for. So it will encourage replacement of, you know, low emissions technology such as gas over high emissions technology such as coal.
So where do you stand on, do you think it's a good idea? Because the reporting we're hearing from your party room yesterday that there was a lot of MPs that were opposed to this, which signals it could create real division in the government.
Look, what I would like to see, it all, and remember, this is...
You're not going to give me an answer, are you?
No, I will get to it.
Come
on. This all depends how you track your targets to the Paris Agreement. Now, you can do it in a linear fashion where you can have the same rate of decrease or increase in your renewable energy target every year. I'd like to see that in a bit of a, almost like, you know, sort of a concave or convex sort of curve.
So you want to wait for the technology first before we start,
well,
I guess,
we can put a little bit of technology in the minute, yeah. But what we know, one thing that's been, we've seen, that the technology is improving all the time. It's almost the same as our smartphones, our television sets, our flat screens. We see enormous improvements in technology. We see prices coming down. We see quality going up. Now, my concern is if we have to get to a Paris target by 2030, rather than sort of rush in the first couple of years of the decade, spend a lot of money on more expensive technology, we're best to wait until later in the decade.
It sounds like an excuse to wait and do nothing. And this report says we need to do something. We need to provide a reliable investment environment for people that want to move into renewables. And the way they've suggested doing it, or Alan Finkel suggested, is this clean energy target. Do you support it or not, Craig? Give me an answer.
It depends on the setting. So you can't say, in principle, yes, but again, it depends on the setting. But the point I think it's important to make, we currently have a renewable energy target, and we are getting, under that, billions of dollars being invested in coal and solar. What we're not getting the investment in is the dispatchable power. And that's the other thing that Dr. Finkel said, the report, which he emphasised we have a problem with. We simply don't have enough dispatchable, which is on-demand power in the system.
All
now,
right.
That's why we have a risk coming up this summer. We have a risk of blackouts in South Australia, in Victoria, and also New South Wales, because we don't have enough dispatchable power. And that's the very first thing we have to fix, Dr. Finkel has emphasised.
On the text line, he doesn't know how to answer a question. someone else says it's never a straight answer with Polly's. Is it, Tom? I've given a very good crack, Craig, but we're out of time.
Oh, well, the other thing I'd say, sometimes it's not actually a straightforward question. That's the other point I'd like to make. So,
well, it won't be for your party room by the sounds of it. We will watch with interest. Thank you, mate.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it.
Hack. So you're saying it's a lucky bull that gets chosen for radio.
Luckiest bull in the world.
On Triple J.
Now, 2 months ago, we took you to a rodeo outside of Mount Isa, and lots of you texted in at the time saying, what about the animals and the way they're treated? Well, today you'll get an in-depth look at the treatment of animals in Australian rodeos, and you'll even meet a couple who were divided by animal welfare in the rodeo scene. So let's get into it. Can rodeos ever treat animals humanely? Our reporter James Patil tracked down a stock contractor who says the answer is yes.
Can you just describe this truck that we're in?
No, because the RTA will come onto my place and I'll take this truck away.
I just say that there's a lot of cobwebs.
Yeah, but there's no redbacks.
We're out at John Gill's station near Wagga in New South Wales. John is 79 years old, a legend of rodeo.
I read somewhere that your family has been raising bulls for rodeo longer than any other family in the world.
That's right. 1906, I think it was.
He's also the stock contractor's representative for the Australian Professional Rodeo Association. His rodeo bulls are each worth thousands of dollars.
Okay, so there's a bunch of bulls in the distance there.
These are our top bulls.
What would one of those bulls weigh?
Around a ton. These same bulls that come up to this hay trailer, you take them to a rodeo, as soon as you fall off, they'll hook the crap out of you.
If I got out of the car right now and stood in the field, what would the bulls do?
They don't know you. They might think you're a bull rider and put you into hospital.
So if you got out right now, you'd be fine?
Yeah, I'll show you.
John's just getting out of the car, going right up to these rodeo bulls. The bulls are just staring at him, chewing the hay. So you're saying they're very gentle outside of the bull ring?
Exactly.
John is trying to demonstrate how well he looks after the bulls.
So what are the bulls thinking right now?
They might be saying, what is this old idiot doing out of the truck, because he never gets out.
Him and his sons raise the calves by hand, and they care for them after they retire. But does any of this actually make rodeo humane for the animals?
We did a few rodeo stories, and a lot of our listeners, they said, you know, you shouldn't be using a bull for entertainment.
Oh, no. With the political correct, no. What we're supposed to be doing is when they're a 2- and 3-year-old, we're supposed to slaughter them and then send them to McDonald's. Cattle in rodeo, bulls in rodeo, they don't get going until the average run of cattle have all run out of their lifespan at 3-year-old.
So you're saying it's a lucky bull that gets chosen for rodeo?
Luckiest bull in the world.
If somebody who was really against bull riding was standing right here in the room, what would you say directly to them?
You just waste your time with them sort of people.
Hi, I'm Gail Darcy. I'm Vice President of Animal Liberation Queensland.
Gail's organisation wants to shut rodeo down.
Because of the psychological stress and fear that rodeo animals are subjected to, rodeos really glorify and celebrate a pretty brutal domination over animals.
What evidence do we have that these animals are terrified?
Cattle are a prey animal. And so in bull riding, the bull has to contend with two stresses, really, on his back. The rider, who's digging in spurs, and also the flank strap, which is around his abdomen. And so that's tightened just as the chute is being opened. To the bull, this feels like a predator on its back. And so his primitive instincts kick in, literally. And so to get the threat off him, he bucks.
If it only took a flank rope to make a horse or a bull buck, why do we go to these lengthy breeding programs? You can put 100 flank ropes on a horse. If you don't want to buck, he won't buck.
I visited a rodeo at Roma, and in the steer wrestling event, the steer actually had its horn just about knocked off. It was just dangling.
Gail filmed what was happening.
He's just having a little bit of trouble to stand that steer on all 4 feet here tonight. He's going to use his power, his strength to get that steer up.
But the announcer at the beginning accused the bull of being uncooperative.
I tell you what, this steer is certainly not being any cooperative with this cowboy here tonight, folks.
And after about 10 minutes, they had to get several people to lead it out of, you know, to basically bodily carry it out of the arena. 5 minutes after, you know, they announced that the bull was fine, which was clearly going to be nonsense.
Our first preference all the time is our livestock. We must look after our livestock.
Incidents like this rarely show the difference between animal welfare protesters and rodeo stock contractors. For Gail, you can't have rodeo and still treat animals humanely. The problem isn't how they're cared for, it's the rodeo itself. And no regulation or code of conduct will change that.
Have you ever been able to convince somebody who's come here with animal welfare issues that what you're doing is safe and humane?
You do get the real militant rat bag that you will see down there at Spencer Street and Flinders Street. They protest over something they don't even know about. And they're the sort of rats that you get. Same element that would love to see no one eat meat. And that's where it'll all end up.
You're listening to Hack on Triple J.
James Patil reporting on the treatment of animals in rodeos. I'd love to hear your views. Maybe you've been involved in rodeos. Maybe you're concerned about them. Can rodeos ever really be humane in the way they treat animals? Give me a call, 1300 055 36, or text in 0439 757 555. Tara says, you cannot humanely treat animals in a rodeo. Unfortunately, these people like to twist the meaning of humane to suit themselves.
Hack. Triple J.
We've got two guests who are on either side of this debate. We've got Dr. Di Evans, who's a vet and the Senior Scientific Officer at RSPCA. Di, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure, Tom. Thank you.
We also have Stephen Bradshaw, who's the Chairman of the Australian Professional Rodeo Association Board. Stephen, thanks for joining us there in Dubbo.
Okay, thanks.
Di, what are your main concerns about the way animals are treated in rodeos?
Well, Tom, I think to help with the listeners gauge a greater understanding of what we're really talking about here, it's important to note that over the past 20 years we've gained a lot more knowledge and understanding of the impact that adverse situations have on the emotional and psychological state of animals. Previously, animal cruelty was sort of put in the context of only considering very serious acts of physical animal abuse, but that's really short-sighted and inadequate. What we need to focus on now is making sure that we provide both physical and mental needs. And it's not just about preventing unnecessary adverse experiences. It's about providing for positive experiences so that animals actually have a life worth living. So I think, you know, that context is extremely important.
So how much emotional, psychological and physical damage do you think is being done, and which parts of the process really inflict it?
Well, in terms of bull riding, I think one of the previous commentators mentioned about the aversive triggers, if you like, and we would totally agree with that in terms of having both something that's pulled tight and applying pressure under a very vulnerable part of the body. So when you think about it, the underbelly, and particularly for bulls, it doesn't need to be touching the testicles or penis or anything like that. It's just that part of the body, because it doesn't have any bony structures to protect it's an area that we instinctively curl around or try to eliminate whatever that risk might be.
Okay, so you've got the belt. Are you concerned about when the bull is in the gate as well?
The gait is really important, and for some animals, not all animals, some will react to that and try to escape or, you know, injure themselves or go down. And there again, there's this psychological impact that's happening on those animals. And obviously, you know, the previous speaker said they don't like having someone on their back. Absolutely right. So why should they be forced to endure that?
Okay, Stephen, I mean, as someone who is involved with rodeos, are you concerned about the emotional, psychological and physical health of these animals?
I guess it's fair to say that people in rodeo, and particularly those that own the animals, are extremely concerned about everything to do with the welfare of the animal. And that is why they take so much time over the years to condition that animal to its eventual environment. And a bull is not put into a rodeo arena until he is at least 4 years of age. And during that 4 years, right from a very small calf, the bull is subjected to all of the conditions in a conditioning process without the stress, without any adverse environment, so that they find that as purely part of their normal environment.
So you're essentially training them to become stressed later on. I mean, so they're still being stressed eventually, right?
No, I wouldn't put it in those terms, because there's no doubt that any athlete, human or animal, is subject to some sort of stress.
But we're putting them in this situation, and that's our choice.
That's correct. And in the first thing I guess to talk about is the events in rodeo are legal, and they have been legal for many years, and they've been subject to many criticisms, and there's been many improvements over years. And we're at a stage now where we have these breeding programs and these conditioning programs in a very similar experience to those of racehorses, to those of any other animal that is used in any sport to achieve the goal, I guess, of the competition.
Well, and the goal is to entertain people, and there's a lot of people texting in saying that we shouldn't be using animals for entertainment. I'll come back to both of you. I want to continue on. Sometimes this whole debate can cause problems even within a relationship. I'd love to know from you if your partner cared less about animal welfare than you did, or you even had a different point of view, would it be a deal breaker for you? Would you break up over bull riding? Well, a woman called Susan Rawlings went on a reality TV show hoping to fall in love, but the man of her dreams, or the man she was paired with and married on this program, loved rodeos. So here's James Patil with the tale of Rodeo and Juliet.
I see these vows not as promises, but as privileges. I get to laugh with you and cry with you.
Both me and Sean had complete different lifestyles.
I pledge to you to hang up my spurs at the end of every day.
They wanted people to keep watching to see if Susan and Sean would work out.
And now pronounce them husband and wife!
The main reason for me why I couldn't live in that lifestyle is completely the rodeo.
The show Married at First Sight matches strangers and marries them in the first episode, and they spend the rest of the series deciding whether to stay hitched. Susan lives in Perth and drives trucks in the mines. She likes to campaign against the treatment of bears in Asia. Sean is an Akubra-wearing cattleman from around Bundaberg. On his days off, he likes to go to the rodeo.
I just couldn't understand why someone would use animals for human entertainment like that.
There's all kinds of events at the rodeo, bull riding and barrel racing and steer wrestling. Susan doesn't like any of these, but her pick of the worst is calf roping.
The Old Downs Cowboy's got his work cut out. They are fresh.
A calf is let out of a gate into the rodeo yard. As it's running away at full speed, it's chased by a rider on a horse. And the rider throws a lasso around its neck.
Yanks it to a complete stop.
The rider dismounts, runs up to the calf and throws a 100-kilogram animal on its side.
Sometimes they grab the fur on the side of the animal and they try and get the knees into the side.
And ties its hooves together.
The calf's bellowing, its tongue's out, it's It's panting, it's scared to death.
Calf roping is illegal in Victoria, South Australia and the ACT. And animal welfare groups are pushing for a national ban. Even within rodeo, some privately say it's given the sport a bad name. Susan wonders why her criticism of calf roping never made the show.
None of it did. To tell you the truth, I really got angry.
Hello, I'm Clive Phillips from the University of Queensland in Brisbane. I'm Professor of Animal Welfare in the Centre for Animal Welfare and Ethics in the Vet School.
Last year, Professor Phillips published a study measuring stress hormones in calves seconds after they'd been roped in the rodeo arena.
We found that they did cause quite a bit of stress, and one can speculate that perhaps if they hadn't been very professional cowboys doing it in 6 seconds, but less professional and doing it in 20 seconds, then there would have been a lot more stress. We also measured behaviour. Nearly all the calves, or in fact all of the calves which were roped, demonstrated an eye roll. It seems to be like the calf sort of shutting itself off from the environment.
And what happened when you brought these results out?
We presented the results to the Australian Professional Rodeo Association.
The Australian Professional Rodeo Association, or APRA, dismissed the results of the study as inconclusive. Which was strange because the study had originally been commissioned by APRA. So you're a scientist and they're basically telling you how to interpret the results of the experiment that you conducted.
Well, I guess you could put it like that, yes. I'm used to that. You know, these are helpless, naive animals. They're being sometimes dragged across an arena. The public should not be using that as a form of entertainment.
Susan, this experiment has been an amazing journey to share with you.
In the final episode, Susan and Sean have to declare whether they want to stay together. Susan is in a white dress, Sean's in a white Akubra.
This has been a difficult decision.
Over the season, a bunch of couples have split up, and Susan and Sean are now the crowd favourites.
I've decided.
They carry the romantic hopes of a nation.
I can't be in a relationship with you.
Susan says the scene was edited to make it seem like she broke the lonely cowboy's heart.
He needs someone to accept that part of his life. If I saw someone doing the calf roping like that, I'd want to go out there and stop it. I feel like if that was someone's puppy, it would be cruel. It would be absolutely inhumane and it wouldn't be done.
Thank you for the journey.
Hack. Triple J. A sad end to Rodeo and Juliet there. I guess it was a tragedy in Shakespeare's version as well. In the studio, we're debating animal welfare in rodeos, and we have Di Evans from the RSPCA and Stephen Bradshaw from the Australian Professional Rodeo Association Board. Di, we heard that calf roping in that story is banned in several states in Australia. Do you think it should be banned across the nation?
Most definitely. There's absolutely no role for calf roping whatsoever, and it has both high psychological and physical impacts on the calves involved. So it's not done on farms and properties. It's, you know, if you went onto a farm and saw that, you'd be accused of not following best practice by the industry itself.
Stephen, where do you stand on that one?
Well, first of all, I have to just set the record straight a little bit. That calf roping is not actually banned in Victoria and South Australia. It has a weight limit on it, and that weight limit is 200 kilos. And the competitors have elected not to rope calves of that level because they believe that that causes more stress the heavier the calf. So that's why...
Okay. Should that be national, that requirement, do you think?
Well, no, we don't think so as an organisation. And I need to say also that as an organisation and with our professionalism, we have the greatest respect for the RSPCA and work with them regularly. And in fact, at a meeting I've had at Dubbo here today, we had the RSPCA here talking to us about a number of issues. And so we have the greatest respect for the RSPCA. And we know that people have a different opinion to us about this issue.
Unfortunately, we're about to hit the news. I hate to cut you off there. It's a fascinating debate we could have for some time. Thank you for joining us there, Steve and Di from the RSPCA. Thank you for joining us as well.
Hack on Triple J.